cities, each law project, and of course we do have some individuals, those who we've got their submissions, and then they will also be given a chance in between, just perhaps in 5 minutes, because of the number of submissions we had, then they of course confirmed on time to come and do the oral submission, but because of the load or the number of these submissions being individuals, we thought maybe we can accommodate them in the chain. But can we just take 3 minutes, then help yourself with some water there, and then we'll start. I hope he will be here by now, but we are running out of time.
I don't think it's the first time that he's coming to this parliament. Maybe Scopa has called him. So is it possible that we can start with those who are here? But before that, Chair, I wanted to propose something very controversial. I have gone through the submission yesterday. I didn't find it very convincing that the submission from Solidarity is indeed the submission that the Portfolio Committee on Labour has called for. It's talking about something else. It doesn't talk about workplace discrimination. I was suggesting that in light of that, Chair, we should request them to prepare a proper presentation, because their submission doesn't talk about workplace discrimination, or we should discard them before even they think of presenting their input, because it doesn't talk about workplace discrimination. And this hearing is about workplace discrimination. I think it's very important.
Mr. Mokala, I didn't get your first words. Can you repeat which company are you talking about, or the group?
I was saying, Chair, while we are still waiting for DG, I'm saying the DG knows this place. I don't know whether the DG is here, but maybe it's been called somewhere by Scopa. But if that is not the case, I think also we need to talk about the presentation of Solidarity. It doesn't talk exactly about what is it that we are intending to for the hearing.
Okay, Mr. Mohamed, can you allow me to stop you just right there? I think we have gone through all this, and not on the presentations which are talking exactly of what we need, but we have allowed, we have opened it up to everyone, and to come and present, and then when we meet as a portfolio committee discuss on this, then we will decide on all of them to say no, this was actually not relevant. Or during the presentation here, you'll be given the chance to say that and maybe advise the presenters correctly. Ntate Mzondeki and Madrea. Okay, Madrea.
Madam Chair, I'm also covered. I'm very happy with your ruling. I support that fully.
Thank you. Can I don't know, Lydia, where is it? Can we perhaps start? Because I was actually waiting for something here, but to welcome the DG, Professor Levine and the team, when
team, but Member Queen, I have only one apology here of Mrs. Benchiva. I don't know if there is, and also of Mrs. Moss, who will leave at quarter past 11 and come back soon, when as soon as she finishes. And Ms. Rajbali also, she may join us. But let me welcome everybody. And today is the last day of one of the most robust submissions and debates that this committee has ever gone through. It is clear that some presenters have been misunderstood the objective of this hearing. It is also unfortunate that even some of our members have been allowed themselves to be overwhelmed by these presentations. Some see these hearings or public hearings maybe as an offensive, and we are saying we want to get the objective of this, to try and work hard in getting what we actually wanted to get. And I want to caution all of us here that our constitutional mandate is to be the vanguard of various legislation that affect the Department of Labor. And of course, we have to be of assistance to the department. It is to the implementation of this legislation that this portfolio committee is, of course, its allegiance to. I want to remind all of us here of our responsibility, and that is to check improvement of these legislations, and of course the situation is at the workplace. The situation at the workplace with regards to equality. I'm saying equality because there is a need to check how far we are. How far we are in terms of the legislation. And I want to reiterate what I said from the start, from the beginning of this presentation, to say all the presentations we received, and in each and every presenter, we would thank the presenters and to say you are here to present and to come up with recommendations. And of course, we accept that, and as a committee, we will be sitting and discussing all the recommendations. It may be the wrong recommendations or whatever, but the decision will be taken by the committee, not myself as the chairperson. In those few ways, also to welcome representatives from the department today. We don't have some Kalite who has been with us on all the proceedings, but today we've got the directorate on employment equity, Mr. Singh and Mr. Lifika. At the back there, you are most welcome, gentlemen, and of course, if there are
questions of clarity, I'm sure you'll be of assistance, or be prepared to can respond on that. But without wasting more time, can I hand over to Prof?
Morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Thank you very much for this opportunity to appear before your committee to discuss workplace discrimination and levels of compliance with Employment Equity Act and Codes of Good Practice by government departments. Apologies if we delayed your meeting slightly. I would like to introduce the members of my team. On my left, I have Colette Clark, who is the Deputy Director General of Human Resource Management and Development. On my right is Rulani Makubela, the Chief Director responsible for these matters. And we also have with us Ranji Reddy. Today's presentation will be made by Rulani. We'll very briefly touch on the regulatory framework. Then we'll talk to the representativity statistics. But then beyond the numbers, we are going to make some observations on forms of discrimination in the workplace and government departments, and then look at some of the challenges of compliance and the measures required to ensure compliance. So with your permission, Honourable Chairperson, I would like to hand over to Rulani to take us through the presentation. Thank you.
In the founding provisions, in Chapter 1, Subsection 1A, states that South Africa is founded on human dignity, the achievement of equality, and the advancement of human rights and freedom, and 1B, on non-racialism and non-sexism. And also in the Bill of Rights, Chapter 2, which states that the Bill of Rights is the cornerstone of democracy in South Africa. It enshrines the rights of people in our country and affirms democratic values of human dignity, equality, and freedom. The Bill of Rights in Chapter 7 refers to the clause on equality. The Constitution regards equality as a right to protection against unfair discrimination on the grounds of race, color, ethnicity, or social origin, sex, religion, marital status, pregnancy, or religion, disability, or language. It is against this mandate that the public service since equality, transformation, and human rights for dignity for all people within the public service. The White Paper on Transformation of the Public Service 1995 highlights the mandate provided for by the White Paper through set targets for blacks and for women in management and for employment of people with disabilities. And the White Paper actually states that within 4 years of all departmental establishments, there must be a 50% black representation at management level. And during the same period, at least 30% of new recruits to middle and senior management echelon should be women. And within 10 years, people with disabilities should comprise at least 2% of the total public service personnel. The White Paper on Affirmative Action re-emphasizes the meeting of this target as outlined in the White Paper on the Transformation of the Public Service. It also indicates that the White Paper represents only a baseline on which national and provincial administrations should aim to improve. It provides furthermore that government will review and reset the national minimum targets by the end of 2000 and every other 3 years. In terms of representation within the public service, looking at the total number of employees that we have 1,172,471 total number of employees within the public service. And in terms of percentages, that's the breakdown. The African population group, we have 75.96. Asians, we have 3.56. 8.72 for colors and 11.76 for whites.
In terms of missing this target, or missing the 75% target set for representation for Black Africans in the public service, the statistics indicate that there are currently 88.24% Black employees overall in the public service. That figure includes the 88.24 includes Africans, it includes colored and Asians. And of that figure, 75.96% are Black African, Black African. This indicates that the public service has achieved its set target in terms of racial representation. Representation of population groups according to race and gender. In this slide, we highlighted representation according to sex and race. Of the total number of 1,172,451 employees, men make up 45.52%, while women make up 64.38%. This is in keeping with the 52% female population in the country. And in terms of the breakdown, you can see that African females constitute 41.28%, Asians 1.68%, and the breakdown is there. In terms of analysis of the gender statistics, an analysis of the status of Black women within the public service has shown that it's shown in the previous table that I showed you now. Of the 64.38% women employed overall, the majority, that is 87.81%, constitute Black women. And that figure includes African women, Asians, and colored. And 12.19% are white women. The table also indicated that in the total workforce, there are 41.28 African women as compared to 34.68 African males, indicating that there are more African women employed in the public service than African men. However, this does not translate to a similar status in management, as will be highlighted later. The review of equity targets. The public service adopted the cabinet-approved target of 30% representation of women in all senior management positions, in line with the SADC target of 30% women in political and decision-making positions by 2005, which was the minimum target reflected in the White Paper on the Transformation of the Public Service 1995. In 2005, Cabinet reviewed this target to 50% women in all senior management positions in the public service. That has to be achieved by March 2009. And in addition to supporting the development of strategic framework for gender equality through the strategy of mainstreaming. In 2005, Cabinet also reviewed and retained the 2% minimum target that was set for people with disabilities to be achieved by 31 March 2010. Representation in the public service senior management. This is how the breakdown looks like in terms of the percentages. We have 19.91 African females compared to 37.79 African males. And the total number of women within senior management positions is 31.56. compared to that of 68.44% of males. And the table, as you can see, also gives you a breakdown in terms of different racial groups. There are currently 31.56 total number of women in senior management positions within the public service. The public service has met and exceeded its 2005 set target of 30% women in key decision-making positions.
Of the 31.56 African women comprise 19.91 of senior management positions. African males comprise 37.79 of management positions, indicating that affirmative action has benefited African males more than African females. There are only 33 women of the total number of 124 persons appointed at salary level 16. This is the DG level. Only 33 women out of the 124 that we have. Women are mainly concentrated in salary level 13 and 14, which are the lower levels of the senior management positions. Representation of people with disabilities in the public service. The trend for employment of people with disabilities within the public service indicates that by March 2002, we had 0.11% people with disabilities across all sectors. In 2005, December, that figure had improved to 0.16%. And in April 2007, the figure improved to 0.17. And this indicates that there's only 0.06 percentage point increase from 2002 to 2007, indicating a very slow pace of growth. The public service did not meet its third target of 2% that was set initially. We should have met this target by 2005, but we couldn't meet it. The review target date for the 2% minimum representation has been extended to 2009. Looking beyond numbers, workplace discrimination still exists or predominates in terms of race, gender, and disability. This was highlighted during the advocacy roadshows that we ran throughout the provinces and also in provincial national departments between January and April 2007. In addition, during a high-level roundtable that was hosted by Minister Mulekhetsi for Public Service and Administration in August 2007, senior managers identified the workplace still has some pockets of discriminatory practices towards the empowerment of targeted groups. Some examples of workplace discrimination that we have noted: sexual harassment of both men and women in hotels, attitudinal stereotyping and insensitivity towards the needs of targeted groups, lack of or no reasonable accommodation for people with disabilities, resulting in their being discriminated against in terms of employment and recruitment. We still have physical barriers in accessing workplace, which also is a discriminatory practice towards people with disabilities. Lack of childcare facilities poses a barrier for women's participation in economic activities. The Public Service Commission audit on affirmative action, gender mainstreaming, and disability equity conducted over the past few years confirmed the existence of these challenges. Measures to ensure compliance by departments, and also this also talks to the code of good practice. In order to address the persistent discriminatory practices in the workplace, the DPSA has put in place strategic frameworks and implementation guidelines with monitoring and evaluation mechanisms, which includes annual social surveys on HIV and AIDS in the workplace, the employee health and wellness framework, including the well-being of persons with disabilities. The second one is the job access strategic framework that talks about the recruitment, the employment, and adaptation of persons with disabilities. And also included in that is the handbook for reasonable accommodation and accessibility. And the next one is the gender equality in the public service, including women in leadership. That also relates to issues of sexual harassment within the workplace. The next one is the review of the HRD strategy, which looks at mentoring, coaching, skills development, and also capacity building in general. And the other one is the strategic framework on employment equity compliance.
Thank you very much, Ms.
Thank you, DG. Members, I will open up for questions, and maybe to also I'm waiting for the attendance list and see if we could maybe accommodate one of the individuals soon after the discussions before breaking for tea at 11. We'll see if I can just get the names of those individuals who are here. And Mr. Spies, and okay. Yeah, I'm sure DG, you are ready for some questions of clarity and input. Over to you.
Thank you, Jay. Just as by way of introduction, I assume that your introductory remarks at the beginning was in response to a letter that I wrote to you. But I will leave the letter for now. I think we can take that on at a later stage in another forum. But getting back to the submission that's been made just now. In 2005, I addressed a question to the minister where I actually inquired about the composition of the public service. And the minister actually responded to that with a very complete and a very good reply where figures were given which corresponds with what you are giving now. But one interesting comparison that the minister drew in that specific reply was a comparison between the composition of the economically active population and the composition of the public service. The economically active population seems to be, or compared to the composition of the economically active population at that stage, they seem to be an underrepresentation of both whites and colored people in the public service. And if the percentages are converted to figures, those figures amount to roughly 20,000 white people and 10,000 colored people. At that stage, it was reported fairly widely in the media, but I assume that the department probably took cognizance of this fact, which is quite a contentious issue in South Africa, unfortunately. So my question actually is, given the fact that these facts were made known 2 years ago, what has been done in the meantime to catch up with regard to that backlog, if there is a backlog? And if not, what can we expect in future in order to catch up with regard to the, to put it that way, the shortage of white and colors in the public service?
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation by the department and also indicate that I think they are capturing of some of the problems or examples of workplace discrimination. I agree with it very well. I think it's really well captured. But just one question, Chairperson, is I see that also they are talking about the measures to ensure compliance by the department. And I'm particularly interested in the monitoring and evaluation mechanism that they say they will be putting in place. Can we from the department get some commitments as to when we can begin to get those reports on progress in terms of that monitoring? And the reason I'm raising this question, Chairperson, is because quite a number of submissions have indicated that one of the weaknesses is the monitoring mechanism that we have. And I think the department can be very helpful to ensure that indeed all the departments are monitored in this regard. I could just make one example of the code on the good practice on the employment of disabled persons. I would like to check with the DGS whether he ensures that each and every senior member or director has got a copy in his office, so that when he's confronted by some of these difficult issues on the employment of disabled persons, he knows where to go, where to get the answers. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Anthony and Mr.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, under beyond the numbers, maybe the department can just give us more explanation, because according to what they present here, it's actually what they intend to do, according to my reading of this presentation. Beyond the numbers, workplace discrimination still predominates in terms of race, gender, and disability. We would like to have more insight of that. What is it? Can you take us through that? Briefly indicate to us what is it that you actually are talking about to that. Yes. The advocacy of the roadshow held by the GPA during January and April, we actually want to here, and we want to be clarified on those issues that deals with discrimination that were picked up during that time. What is it that you are reporting or presenting here? The questions of reasonable accommodation for people with disabilities, where? You see? That's what we want you to share. Thanks.
Thank you. Babu.
Thank you very much. I also want to join my colleagues to welcome the board for the presentation from the department. I have some few questions. In a white paper of 1995, there are three objectives that you put. One, you said within 4 years, all departmental establishments must be endeavored to be at least 50% black at management level. That is the first one. Within 4 years from 1995. The second one, you're saying that during the same period, at least 30% of new recruits to the middle and senior management economy should be women. Three, within 10 years, people with disabilities should comprise 2% of public service personnel. Where are we now? What happens to that target of 50% of black in management? What happens to the 30% and also to the 2% with disabilities? That is the first question. Where are we now in terms of those numbers? The second one. You are saying very boldly, because I'm asking these questions because of you are a department of government, and I believe in this transformation agenda that we are engaged in, we are supposed to be in the face in the public. The public must see transformation when they enter you or when they read anything about you, in order for them to emulate what you do that the government says they must do. So, you are saying workplace discrimination still predominates. What makes that? If that, who does that discrimination, by the way? Mr. Spitzer is a law. I'm not sure. Maybe we can talk about that one when we are together. Who makes that discrimination? And what kind of discrimination are we talking about in this case? Are black people discriminated against or white people are discriminated against? Are women discriminated against or are men discriminated against? Are people with disabilities discriminated against or those who are able to vote? Because I want this to be very clear to us that what are the trends of discrimination? And if we're saying that it predominates, what are the causes for that? Maybe the law, I don't know, but they are. What makes this slow pace of growth for people with disabilities. Because I always say government should be the mirror, should be an example to the whole nation. If government agrees with a certain path, that must move. So it must be a leader in that transformation agenda. So what makes that small piece? Because in all the departments and all the reports that we will find is that there is this slow pace. Because the growth is very slow. And we don't know what could be making that. Yeah. In terms of economically active population, maybe we will enter that. But I have these few questions for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Freya. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, when I look at tables like those on pages 3 and 4 of the presentation, the ones highlighted in yellow, I become very nervous and feel very uncomfortable. So to address that, I have a very straightforward question. How do you decide in which category a person belongs? Is it by voluntary association? And then a further question flowing from that is, if I was working for you and I declared myself an African, according to President Beatty's statement, I'm an African, a famous African speech, will you accept my voluntary association and my own declaration or classification as such?
Yes, Prof. Those the questions, I don't know how are you going to allocate the response, but over to you.
Niabongo Patiwe Salo. Mina Nium Afriki. Nia Koloma Nkuma Sintu Siswatine Sizulu. Kepa Ngumlungu Nyindota. I'm a white male African, and we are confronting certain realities in this country, which we are trying to address through the policy frameworks that we've developed, through the targets we've set ourselves. I think I will just give a sort of overview, highlight, and then the team will get into some of the specific issues that have been raised. Because I think a number of the questions are trying to say, what do we do beyond the numbers? And what are the real challenges that we face? And clearly, what the numbers are telling us, that if we look at leadership and strategic direction over the administrative apparatus of the state, we do still have very fundamental representativity challenges. We need to work hard to ensure that we are able to meet our equity targets in the management echelon. The big challenges in the management echelon pertain to women in senior management positions, particularly black women. Because what the figures have shown is that there is an underrepresentation in the management echelon because black women are located on the lower rungs of the management echelon, which means that decision making is still predominantly in the hands of males in the public service. Now, I think that is a fundamental issue that we are confronting. So we have achieved the women in management target, as the honourable member has asked, but we set a new target for 2009, which requires us to achieve 50% women in the management echelon. The question is, even if we reach that target, will those women be in the lower rungs of the management echelon, or will they be the leaders of the public service? So for me, that is one of the key challenges that is confronting us. I think it's true also to say that we've stuck with the same target in the area of disability equity, because we have failed across the public service to display the necessary focus and intent, because that's what it requires to meet these targets. That's what it's all about. It's about focus and intent. It's about ensuring that as we fill each vacancy, we are taking stock on an ongoing basis of what it is that we need to achieve in terms of targeting. On the monitoring side, we have developed a number of strategic frameworks across the area of human resource management and development. And in terms of those strategic frameworks, we have developed indicators which we are starting to monitor. We can provide reports on an ongoing basis on the figures. And this is because of the Vulindlela system, which is drawn from the payroll, the PERSOL system. And that is also the system that allows us to depict in yellow the particular tables that have been referred to. And this is because each application form for a position in the public service gives us that information. All applicants are required to respond to that particular issue when they apply to join the public service. I'm not sure if Colette will go first, and then Rulani will fill in, and Ranji as well, where relevant. Thank you.
Just to develop further on the input that Professor Levine has given, I think I will hone in on the original question around the economically active population. That is not a linear question in the sense that if there's economic growth, generally you have got three sectors in terms of economic activities. You're dealing with your tradables, you're dealing with your private non-tradables, and you're dealing with your public non-tradables, which is the utilities and government departments. We basically on the last classification. Where there is a high degree of economic growth in a country, generally there's a higher degree of employment in your tradables and your private non-tradables. Now, that will definitely vary depending on the economic policy and the impact of economic activities in that country. So it's not a linear question to respond to in terms of what we're doing in terms of government and utilities versus what is happening in the economically active population. So there isn't a direct correlation because there's so many other factors and indicators that can change the grouping and the classification there. The other aspect that we have to take consideration of is that the definition of workplace in terms of Employment Equity Act for the public service specifically in terms of the way we deconstruct it is actually the employer. So for all intents and purposes, we are sitting with 139 employers for the purposes of the determination of a workplace plan. And if one is looking at the aspects that one has to take into consideration in terms of all the stakeholders for the purposes of that particular workplace, the geographical representation obviously deals with the spatial geopolitical context of that particular workplace and how they make the determination. There's also factors in terms of decided caseload and bringing in the aspects of the competency precedent that can also be used by a workplace, determining whatever their particular decisions are in relation to how they basically are going to determine the different targets for that particular workplace. So the demographic representation is determined at a particular workplace for the purposes of the Employment Equity Act. And hence, when we are aggregating it, we're aggregating it with the decentralized decision-making in terms of the context of what that particular employment equity plan is feeding us at the centralized level. So it isn't as homogenous as we can give strategic frameworks in terms of the guidelines, and those are complied with. The Public Service Commission has just put out an audit report specifically with reference to gender mainstreaming, and that's one of the issues that they also raise, in terms of the existing legislative framework. But coming back to a question that you're asking, the issue about the persons with disabilities, the education system only post 94 dealt with an integrated learners with special educational needs, where the integration in terms of mainstreaming happened. So by and large, what we were finding is that learners with disabilities were not getting into the schooling system. So if they're not getting into the schooling system, the opportunities for employability into the workplace are also reduced because of the discrimination within the schooling system. So the strategy that we are dealing with is actually dealing with the schooling system as a recruitment place, to try and get learners into internships and learnerships into the public service. And those are the strategies that we have got in the draft strategic framework that we are currently consulting through the advocacy workshops. Speaking to the aspects of the strategic frameworks actually deal with all the aspects of the legal and the political mandate to drive what is supposed to be happening within all our transformation programs in government, and basically determining the monitoring and evaluating tools are based on the success indicators that the end users have basically indicated that they would like to see be measured. But one of the things of constitutional democracy for us in the process of coming up with the strategic framework is understanding that we have to collaborate with persons with disabilities in order to connect with them and coordinate them, and basically then you will get compliance in terms of what needs to be happening in the workplace. So it's actually an educative process for the transformation of our own workplaces. Because by and large, what you have to understand is that we inherited the old model of government, and we basically have to transform that model of government in terms of the new thinking and the ideology. And for us, the strategic frameworks are the way to go. The minister launched the 8 principles for head of departments for gender mainstreaming on the 27th of August, where all HODs are obliged to put into their action plans and their strategic plans what they will be doing for gender mainstreaming. We are going the similar route for disability management in the workplace, which means that against the key outcomes of the performance contracts of HODs, they must speak to how they are basically addressing that in the workplace, which would then be integrated as part of their performance management contracts. Thank you.
I'll talk specifically to the question that talks about where are we now in terms of numbers, looking at the target that was set, 50% black for management, black people in management positions, 30% women, and 30% people with disabilities. I think Colette touched on the reasons why there's no progress in terms of achieving targets for people with disabilities, the 2% that was set. But for women, the slides indicated that we are at 31.56% for women. And for black people as well, we have exceeded the target. But specifically for black women, the target has been shifted to 50% now. We were at 31.56%, but the target has been shifted to 50% by 2009. So that's where we are at. In terms of who is discriminating who, I think it's across the board. We cannot specifically indicate one that is whether whites are discriminating against blacks or blacks are discriminating against whites. As we indicated that during the roadshow, it was pockets of practices that we noticed when we were doing the roadshow that people reported on.
I just want to comment a little bit on what Colette raised in terms of what will we actually be doing beyond numbers. And we look at the strategic framework just to show you how it ties in with addressing the issue of workplace discrimination. The one on gender equality and job assets is actually focusing on 4 pillars, all 4 pillars covers, which should cover the whole area. If you look at enabling environment, it would be actually through putting in place workplace policies and guidelines. It should look at equity issues, which would look at preventing unfair, or we should say encouraging equal opportunities in Now, one of the things that we will be focusing through these strategic frameworks will be to drive the establishment of institutional mechanisms to take forward both the disability issues and the gender equality issues in the workplace. And that would be looking at the gender focal point and the disability focal point, and ensuring that they are located in the correct places within the workplace, as well as at the right level, so that it gives them teeth to bite, you know, rather than giving them low levels with a fruit basket of issues to worry about and not being able to implement. In terms of the who does discrimination at the workplace and what kind of discrimination, what we have picked up so far is that, you know, some of the things that are coming up is that there's a persistence of cultural discrimination at the workplace, whether it's you know, related to race or whether it's related to sex, but it's existing there. There's a resistance at some levels to change. We find that there's also problems in terms of gender relations. And, of course, some of the things that came up during the roadshows and in discussions has, you know, made us want to actually complete the barriers analysis, which would give us a fuller explanation of what exactly is happening in terms of discrimination at the workplace. But some of the things that are happening is actually a lack of compliance by departments to what the EE is saying in terms of organizational culture, addressing problems in terms of organizational culture and organizational climate. Also, you know, there's a lack of compliance in terms of the code of handling sexual harassment cases. There's no proper forums established. So people are experiencing problems in actually taking forward some of the things they're experiencing at the workplace. So hopefully a barriers analysis social survey will actually identify further what the PSC has raised in its audit reports as well.
Members, can I just caution you with the time? Then I hope you the program. I said I will also give a chance or an opportunity to some individuals in between the presenters. Can we just be aware of that? Mr. Anthony and Mrs. Treya?
No, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make a follow-up from the response that you got. I want to make a proposal because there seem to be other detailed reports that reflect the areas covered under beyond numbers. I want to propose that the department to provide us outside this public hearing with more details, so that we can go through them. The reason for this proposal is that the understanding of calling on this public hearing is to follow up on the report that you got from the Employment Equity Commission. And beyond this public hearing, we are intending to go out there and try and assist and address and pinpoint the key areas that will be indicated by yourself, because we want to address it. We don't want to come back next year and talk about discrimination again. We want to deal with it. We want to, as far as we can, we want to get rid of it. So the proposal is that, in terms of the detail, because you're dealing with matters of principle here, in terms of the detail, we would like to, we propose that you provide us with detailed information so that we can distinguish which way we go in terms of fast-tracking those areas.
Thank you, Dante. Mrs. Gray. Yeah, no follow-up question from me, Madam Chair. I'm still with my first question that I've not received an answer yet. So I hope it was just an oversight on the side of the department and not deliberately sidestepping the issue. But I would like to get an answer to my question. Prof, briefly, while you are still discussing me,
I thought that DG has actually tackled this in terms of describe the application forms that we have actually gave the classification that that is why we get that number. How many blacks, how many colors, how many Indians, because people just classify themselves.
Okay. Chair, can I just interact in here for further clarification? Because I understand there's a form. Yes, I knew that. And someone's got to fill it in. So if I am an employee, so I fill it in. They ask you black, white, colored, Indian, male, female, whatever. So I put there African. Will you accept that? If not, why not? Prof, do you want to come in quickly? Or can we just leave that for now? Yeah. Can we leave that for now and then? Yeah, definitely we are going to be in touch with the department. Metwala and Mr. Steve, very, very brief, please. Mrs. Twana,
please. Thank you, Madam Chair. To me, it remains not clear. The answer is not yet there, that we have been crying of there are good policies, but the monitoring system is weak. Now, can the department actually explain what mechanism are they using to actually depict this discrimination at workplace? Thank you.
Mr. Speech,
actually, just a comment on the response that was given to my question. If the question is not linear in the sense that economically active population is not determined, then the reply by your minister was not linear in the sense that she drew that comparison. So that's just as a point of clarification from my side. And then secondly, I believe that the Employment Equity Act does contain a definition of what economically active population means, and the demographic that needs to be used as a guideline for determining targets. So just as a response from my side, I believe it is determinable. It is determinable how the composition of the economically active population looks like. There is a guideline that should be used for determining those targets, and I am concerned about the fact that 2 years has left and nothing has been done to address this issue.
Thank you, Mrs. Moss. And Prof, I think I will allow you to respond on those in writing. I'm actually looking at time because you are going to be, we are going to be in touch with you really while looking at all these presentations. So I'm sure, I hope you'll try and avail yourself in memos.
I think Roman was not born in one day. And I think the democracy is still young. We actually take in things over from the past. And we mustn't think we become members of parliament to criticize other people. We have a role, every one of us sitting here who represent the people of South Africa have a role to play. And that role is to make the wrong things right and to move forward. Even saying that, I hear the questions that you're asking. But then you must ask yourself what questions. What will you do as Linda Moss to take South Africa forward? We know we receive, or we actually get things of the past. So what I'm trying to say is that I totally, totally support some of the ideas what you present to us today to take us forward. And it's our role to monitor things, because some of us who are sitting here as members of parliament are also be deployed in different constituencies where we are working. And therefore, where we are deployed in different constituencies, we must let those things happen. I can make an example what yesterday what the professor was saying about the discrimination, race, and so forth. People like to bring in about racism and everything. But in your area where you are deployed, by myself, I can tell you about experience. There are some companies, people, workers' companies. I even see, I went to the companies to visit some of the friends I was with in the trade union last Friday. They are still the same. They're not changing, they're not transforming. But here we want to speak, and people are seeing and speak things and mention things of criticizing. So what? The poll is in everyone's court. But what will they do with this poll? So I want to come to a person to on page 2. I think Kongi was
raising. I thought you were just making a comment, but can you briefly please do?
Yeah. Person, I think this thing of the 2% about disabilities was right. I think, and this thing of the disabilities, I think it's in every department. Whatever you can say, it's in every department. It is our role to see that the disabilities must be issue of transformation and equality be addressed. So I see you raise a year about 2% for over 10 years. And we didn't reach the 2%, but we had that really started. But I hope and trust on this proposal that you will really put in effort in the willingness that we really will try to reach the target over 10 years.
Thank you. I take that as a comment. Thank you very much, Mrs. Moss, and a genuine one. As I've said, Prof. You will respond in writing on some of the comments and questions also. And really, I would love if you would maybe be with us today or some of your members to listen to the presentation as government, really. The Department of Labor has got representation on all these proceedings. Because it was our aim or intention that government and also parliament to present. But we'll talk about that because we are still awaiting parliament to present. In rounding up, I'm sure they will make up their minds. But members, can you please allow me, because we do have two groups or two individuals who will be giving a chance in between the presentations. But we do have the movement here, the movement against discrimination of indigenous minorities, led by Mr. John Johnson, and of course we do have an individual from within this province, Mr. Willem Gortz, those who will be given a chance in between. But now, allow me, before breaking for tea, to quickly ensure Mr. Johnson will be able to do that within 5 minutes. But let me take this opportunity to thank Professor Levine and your team. Thank you very much to respond to the invitation. And you said we endured. I hope you know and understand. What does that mean? Good to win, Lord. And I really like that. You are an African, you said so. So thank you very much. I'm sure some white people will also try and learn one of the indigenous languages. Thank you very much for coming. Can Mr. Johnson quickly in 4 or 5 minutes? No, not Mr. Yeah, Mr. Johnson, who is representing. Or quickly, if you have your team there, just introduce them and then quickly come in.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to present to you here today a very serious issue. I just want to correct one thing, Madam Chairperson, and that I am not speaking as an individual. I'm speaking as the president of a movement called Madam. It's a member against domination of indigenous African minorities. So I just want to make that correction, Madam Chairperson. But in any case, thank you very much for this opportunity. Madam Chairperson?
Yeah, I accept that. And I was saying an individual because you people, I don't want to say you hijacked me, but I said I will accommodate some of you because not everybody could really get a chance to do this, but I really take your point, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson, for your kindness to accommodate us. because the issue that I was going to present is a very serious issue. Madam Chair, my name is John Johnson. I'm a Khoisan first indigenous person from the historical Southern Cape of the Nikwa region, where my indigenous lineage emanates from. I'm a deputy director in the Department of Correctional Services and have been actively involved in the transformation of the department over 35 years. I play a key leading role in the contribution towards freedom of South Africa by Khoisan people. My activism in the Department of Correctional Services was marked by me spearheading non-racial sports under the auspices of SACOS right from the years of the 70s. I sacrificed multiple offers of promotions from the apartheid government for my people's freedom from this period up to our new dispensation. From my involvement in the UNIF and my relationship with prominent then anti-apartheid activists, I was part of the formation of the Prison Civil Rights Union pop crew. Here I once again played an integral role in South Africa's first security forces trade union since 1989. During this time, Madam Chairperson, I was arrested several times, suspended, put under house arrest, and my family and I have survived an attempt against my life during the apartheid years. I also was an intimate liaison with former President Nelson Mandela, so much so that he summoned me for help in 1996 to prevent the potential civil unrest during the fragile transition from apartheid to a democratic South Africa. That was during my time as Popcrew's elected national president. Popcrew was a major milestone for South Africa's freedom struggle started by the Khoisan individuals in South Africa security forces. Madam Chairperson, I now want to illustrate my victimization, discrimination, and possible elimination in my workplace. I was appointed at maximum prison in Portsmouth during 1997 as the first non-white head prison of Portsmouth. At this stage, Madam Chairperson, the prison was in a state of anarchy. I transformed maximum prison and its correctional management into a center of excellence that is today modeled by many other prisons in South Africa. This prison was documented in various award-winning national and international books and documentaries. I also received many international invitations to speak about this process of transformation, as well as at the Jali Commission that was well received by both Commission and the media. Maximum prison in Portsmouth was declared as the best run prison in South Africa, with the most exceptional record of service delivery as described by government by the Jali Commission. I was adamant and proud to implement our government's policies. Instead, Madam Chair, my employer, instead of acknowledging my contribution, I became a victim of my successes. Madam Chairperson, the discrimination in the workplace I was experienced, I was discovered, was all in aid of either me losing my job, being incarcerated, or losing my life ultimately. I received a death threat letter in the post at work, and it was immediately reported to my area commissioner of Portsmouth, Mr. Clifford Nakachan, who was also my supervisor in 2002. The area commissioner was reluctant to deal with this issue, but after my persistence referred it to NIA, National Intelligence Agency. What is significant, Madam Chair, is that during this traumatic experience of death threat, I was investigated by an allegation of receiving a cash amount of 288,000 rand from a prisoner. This was dealt by the area commissioner and my supervisor, Mr. Clifford Nakachan, without me even knowing of such an allegation and my involvement in this investigation. This is allegation that was underhandedly then referred to the Jali Commission, intended as a character assassination, was investigated by the Jali Commission and found to have no merit. Then in April 2003, NIA, the National Intelligence Agency, compiled an official report setting out their factual findings regarding the allegations of death threats that are summarized as follows. Number one, first, that there is a direct threat upon my personal life. There is a direct attempt to vilify my character, of which the corruption allegation of the receiving of the amount of 288,000 rand is such an example.
This is the result of NIA finding me to be a champion of transformation in the Department of Correctional Services. The NIA report explicitly states that these threats emanate from parties from both outside and within the Department of Correctional Services. The report goes to say that these parties would make use of a hitman to kill me, and thus NIA recommended that the Department of Correctional Services should put measures in place to secure my security. In October that same year, I was requested by the Provincial Commissioner, Mr. Galiche, the then Provincial Commissioner, to assist and stabilize the Goodwood prison. In terms of our temporary agreement, a departmental vehicle was made available for me to commute to and from Goodwood prison. As this was a temporary arrangement, my family and I still reside at Portsmouth. I was assured the transfer would in no way prejudice me in respect of upgrading my current post at maximum security prison to that from deputy director to director. After working at Goodwood prison for more than 6 months, a colleague of mine discovered through a by chance inspection of Department of Correctional Services records that I was permanently appointed to Goodwood. In a very cold and disrespectful manner, I received a letter stating this process was done without my knowledge and consent, contrary to what was agreed to with the Provincial Commissioner, Mr. Galiche. I felt disillusioned and deeply disappointed with the new South Africa that I had sacrificed so much for. How could the government that I believed in and supported treat me this way, despite my history and testimonies of success? This resulted in me having to take leave from work because of depression. Despite submitting all the lawful medical reports and sick certificates, a medical inquiry was then secretly instigated by the Department of Correctional Services. My salaries and medical benefits were taken away unprocedurally for about 10 months. This was happening with the death threat of NIA findings and recommendations still being unresolved. The death threat of NIA report and these unconstitutional dealings with me at this stage still remain unresolved. I was further informed early in 2007, Madam Chairperson, of three staff members working at the maximum prison in Portsmouth, together with NIA, officials being part of secret meetings to destroy me. These meetings were arranged by Portsmouth Area Manager, Mr. Clifford Makashan. In these meetings, they discussed the elimination of me from the DCS and undermine my capacity as a correctional manager and ensure the defamation of my character. One of the participants of these meetings departed with his information because he said he could no longer live with that they are doing. He is also scared to speak out because of fear of losing his job. Madam Chairperson, I only have 1 minute. I haven't got, because I shortened that submission. Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. Only 1 minute. Madam Chairperson, in conclusion, what is the connection between the death threats, the corruption allegations, the secret meeting, and the various unconstitutional onslaughts against me? NIA's report of 2003 advised my employer to implement measures to safeguard my life and public image, because they predicted the creation of such operations against me. Why are they having secret meetings with the Area Commissioner, Mr. Makachan, and my subordinates about what, without my knowledge? Because I spoke out against this discrimination, and myself, Khoisan correctional officials, I initiated an organization called MADAM. Currently, myself and three other executive members of MADAM are all dismissed from the department since the 1st of June. The dismissal was approved by a kangaroo court. Is this dismissal a culmination of 5 years of discrimination, victimization and harassment of me at my workplace? Finally, has my dismissal been subject to secret meetings in the department? More importantly, Madam Chair, I still continue to live in fear for the safety of myself and my family. I am in need of immediate security measures to safeguard our lives. I also call on you, Madam Chairperson, and on this committee to initiate an independent investigation on this matter. I thank you very much, Madam Chairperson, for granting my Khoisan people and myself this opportunity to share our plight to you. I salute you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Yeah, I think you will agree with me, Mr. Jefferson, that indeed you hijacked me. I thought we will hear more about Khoisan, but anyway, members, these are the some of the examples and stories that we got from the submissions, because we cited examples of all sorts. But thank you very much. We will be looking at that and maybe refer it to the necessary department. You know, we'll refer it to the department relevant to what you are saying.
No.
You are being sabotaged. We'll talk that during tea time.
I just want to say, Madam Chairperson, I heard that you said that you heard very little of a Khoisan. It might be the case, but I am a Khoisan. I make an example of me. My proposal that I submitted to this committee is in detail about the Khoisan and all the relevant regulations, international and national.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, we are going to look at that, Papa, but in terms of the example you gave about yourself, that's what will be referred to the relevant department. Members, is it about the Khoisan?
Can I have just one clarity?
Okay.
Thank you. This report contains, you know, issues that has to be dealt with at different institutions. But I want to extract one issue that deals with the labor relations and check whether there's anything that, what did you do in effect with regard to your dismissal of this one? Did you take it through the institutions that deals with disputes, especially your transfer from Portsmouth to Goodwood Station? What did you do in terms of that? Because you've got a dispute of rights that you have to institute so that you can embark on that process to address that particular problem. Have you gone through those processes of the labor relations that you can present yourself and your case can be dealt with in terms of that?
Thanks, Mr. Johnson, quickly.
Yes, Madam Chairperson. I have registered this plight of mine at various institutions of the state. I'm talking about the Human Rights Commission, I'm talking about the Correctional Services Bargaining Council, I'm talking about the Public Protector, to no avail. And then I started the process of conciliation. First of all, the appeal. I appeal against it, but as I've mentioned, it was like a kangaroo court. All laws were violated and my appeal failed, without going into detail. But then I started the process of going to the conciliation process. That failed. The department didn't want to talk about it. And hopefully other institutions like the Constitutional Court or High Court or Labor Court might do something about it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Can we break for tea and, of course, welcome the Khoisan delegation? And after tea, we are just breaking for 5 minutes for tea, and then and ask Solidarity to come forward here for their presentation. Thank you very much.